And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Andrea P. from San Diego.
I'm Andrea, I'm an alcoholic. Larry told me no one was going to be here tonight. He forgot to tell all of you. Thanks to Larry and Christina for asking me to speak. This is my first time speaking for this long, for this large of a group. And the world didn't end, so apparently I'm here. I was like, well, if it happens, I won't have to speak. But I was also wanting to change the format and make it a 20-year requirement for main speakers. So my sobriety date is September 14th, 1998. I've been sober for 14 years, and I will share what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Welcome to all the newcomers, and happy birthday to Raymond and Duncan, and thanks, Isaac, for your 10-minute share. Start off with, you know, what alcohol was like for me in my life. Growing up, it looked like the people who drank to me were having more fun than the people who didn't drink. And, I'm really nervous. All right. I was nervous earlier, and I was thinking, there's something that takes this feeling away, and it dawned on me, alcohol. I know there's something, you know, and food wasn't cutting it, the movie wasn't cutting it. I'm like, alcohol. And so I like to drink. And my first experience that I really remember with alcohol was nothing fantastic. It was just the ability to breathe. I didn't know that I was uptight and living in fear my whole life. And I think that my life was unmanageable before I started drinking. I could never make the outside in my life the way I wanted them to be. I could never be cool enough or have the right guy like me, or there was just always things on the outside that weren't to my liking. And when I took a drink, like, I just didn't care. And I could relax, and it was fun. I relate a lot to Bill's story. I'm terrible at quoting the book. I misquote it all. I don't know page numbers, and I say the wrong things, and that's just how it is. But I relate a lot to Bill's story and how he talks about when he first started drinking, and he felt part of life at last. And that was my experience. And I remember, you know, shortly after my first drink, having a drink, and that was the night, like, you know, the cool girls wanted to hang out with me, the boy I had a crush on, we kissed. It was just like a magical night for me. And I saved those beer bottles for a long time on the top of my dresser. And they weren't even fancy beer bottles. It was like Coors Light. But no, it was they represented something really special in my life. And it's like, you know, I had purpose and meaning and direction. And I didn't have that before I started drinking. I did have, you know, I loved to dance. And but it wasn't the same as what I got from alcohol. And I quickly gave up dancing in favor of the new life that I had found and the path that I was on. And you know, like most teenagers, and my drinking career was relatively short and progressed fairly rapidly. I could go through all the years and highlight my drinking because it was, you know, a total of 6 years. okay, where was I? Drinking, okay. Oh, yeah, I drank on the weekends and at the keg beer, and I never thought I was an alcoholic. I didn't think there was any chance I was an alcoholic. There were alcoholics in my family. I knew they were men, and I knew they were older, and I was never going to be one, and it just wasn't even on my radar at all. And I didn't know that I was having an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It's the only reaction I ever had. I have a drink, and I have another one, and I thought it was the same reaction that everybody, all my peers were having. And I drink to the point where I throw up, pass out, or we run out. And that's just the way it was for me, and I didn't see anything unusual or abnormal about that. I didn't see anything abnormal about that until many years later when I went back and looked at the truth and the facts about how my drinking went. And So I would drink on the weekends, and I had a great time. But during the week, I was still unhappy. And I just thought if, you know, circumstances were different in my life, I'd be happy. If I was thinner, or if I had the boyfriend, or whatever it was, I'd be happy. So I wasn't happy during the week, but I was, you know, the weekends were great. And I could be in the moment. You know, the promises that we talk about in the 9-step came true for me when I drank. I could be in the moment. My fear went away. All that happened for me. And then normally I'm not quite this nervous, but when I was 17 years old, so there were things, like I said, I didn't think my drinking was abnormal, but there were a few things that would happen and I would just like note, like, oh, that's odd. Like, you know, when I was 16, I was in my car by myself just downing a 40 before going to the next party. And I thought, oh, you know, that's kind of odd, but, you know, I never thought about it again. And then there was like the time that I was trying to make myself puke before, you know, the party hadn't even started. And then I went into the party and I was still drinking and I'm like, that's kind of odd. Like, I'm really drunk and I'm still trying to get more down. I'm thinking, that's a little odd. But, you know, not really a big deal. You know, and like when I saw double or triple, like, it's kind of odd. But so. And then, so when I was 17, I started using other substances that made it so I didn't have to be sober anymore. Because during the week, I'm not happy. I'm not a happy, sober person. And so now and Bill Story, he describes a point in his alcoholism where he hardly drew a sober breath. And that happened for me at 17, and I was fine with it. I didn't want to draw a sober breath. Actually, the times where I had to be sober, I was usually crying, and I thought that was kind of odd, too. Like, huh, how come I cry every time I'm sober? So not having to be sober worked just fine for me. When I turned 18, I waited actually till the day after I was 18 to go down to Mexico, and I was scared to death. But once I got there, I literally felt like I died and went to heaven. Like, I hit the gold at the end of the rainbow, and I had a younger sister, and I couldn't wait to get home and tell her, like, what I had found. I mean, access to alcohol, unlimited amounts, dancing, and attention from guys. Like, it just doesn't get any better for me. So I went down there a lot. And, you know, I started having consequences to my drinking, but I never, ever related any consequence in my life to drinking. And they were always all well worth it for me. Whatever price I had to pay was worth the effect that I was getting and what it was doing for me in my life. And then as time went on, I naturally progressed from, like, the keg beer at the high school parties to hard alcohol as soon as I could get it, and then to higher alcohol content. When, you know, I checked actually at Trader Joe's the other day. I used to like Fat Weasel Ale because I had a higher alcohol content. And the restroom is right near the beer section. So I'm like, well, I'll just see if it's still there. And they do still carry it. And then, oh, I ended up drinking Long Island iced tea. But I'm not an alcoholic, you know, according to me. It's just like I like what it did for me. I don't know. It tastes good and I liked where it got me quickly. So that, you know, that progression happened for me naturally, but I never questioned it. I knew those other things that were illegal, like that was a problem, and you know what? The obsession with alcohol for me, the two biggest things that the obsession for alcohol says to me is I was too young and that I'm an addict, and those have been huge things for me to overcome. When I was 20 years old, I had a boyfriend, and he was like the guy. He definitely was too good for me, but you know, he was like the guy of my dreams. I knew I wasn't good enough to get, and I ended up being in a relationship with him. And he is my example of a hard drinker. And our book talks about moderate drinkers, hard drinkers, and real alcoholics. And it talks about a hard drinker, if they have a good enough reason, can stop or moderate their drinking. And when we started dating, he was smoking pot, and I had already had a stoner boyfriend. It was like totally over that. And so I said, you know, you can't smoke pot. We're just not, it's not going to work out with me. And so he just gave it up. Like, gave it up. No big deal. And then at some point, he gets a job. And he, like, he, like, cuts back. and like maybe not even drink sometimes, and like wants to go to bed early and get up early, and I just think he is lame. And I didn't once like, yeah, let's stay home and make dinner. Like, I'm like, see ya. And so he, I mean, we were 20 years old, and he was a big guy, and he drank a lot. He could drink as much as me, and maybe even a little more. But when it came to a reason, like a job that he loved, or you know, he wanted to be a relationship he wanted to be in, he was able to stop or, you know, moderate his drinking. Another thing, you know, I wasn't able to make amends to this guy, unfortunately. I really hurt him a lot, but he was done. Like, he was done. So he didn't want my amends. But he has no idea what a big part of my story he is either. Like, he was really helpful in a lot of ways. I remember one night, you know, 3 a.m, I'm a drunk mess again, and he's yelling down the middle of the street, "You just need to quit drinking." And I think to myself now, like, how did he know? Like, how? I'm still baffled. Like, I mean, I was young. Everybody's drinking a lot. But somehow he knew that my drinking was a little different. And then I remember a Christmas, and he made, like, homemade, it was really sweet, a picture frame. There was a picture of he and I in the middle, and then around the outside, he, like, typed up this whole thing about, you know, how wonderful I was, and on and on. But anyway, he put in there, he's like, you know, even though we, you know, he loves hanging out with me, even though it involves drinking and smoking, and I don't think that's odd. Like, he sees that as odd, the amount that we're drinking and doing other, like, but I don't see that as, I'm like, huh. Like, it never crossed my mind that that was unusual. Like, that was just, like, and the book talks about that, too, like, our drinking life, you know, is the only normal one. And, yeah, and the last thing I remember him ever saying to me was, stay sober. So, and another, he, you know, he's a, and my first attempt, actually, at sobriety was, you know, he'd finally had enough of me. And he came over, and he's like, you know, you're really unhappy. And so we broke up. And so in a desperate attempt to get him back, I went to some, if you have a problem, I saw some commercial, like, if you have a problem, call 1-800, blah, blah, blah. So I called, because I really didn't know what else to do. And I went there, and that's how I was introduced to 12-step meetings in the first place, was in my desperate attempt to save this relationship. And I went to my first meeting, and it was a meeting for another fellowship, because I did not think that I was an alcoholic, and I identified with what I heard in that meeting. And I remember leaving there and thinking to myself, that was great, but they don't drink, and I don't have a drinking problem, and I don't know anybody who doesn't drink, but, you know, it's kind of like, that was great. And I doubt I lasted 9 days. I think, I like to say I lasted 9 days, and we got back together, and he was, like, all gung-ho, going to be supportive, but, you know, I can't do that. And if I could have stopped for any reason at all, it would have been to save that relationship, and I absolutely couldn't stop. And I'm grateful he wasn't codependent enough to hang out with me and let me make his life miserable any longer than he actually did. And one of my amends today to that person is I pray that he has loving, healthy relationships in his life and is doing well. So anyway, that was my introduction to meetings. And like I said, I lasted 9 days. And then, you know, my problem is also my solution. So eventually it gets to the point where it's causing problems in my life, in all areas of my life. And I was talking about, you know, people who have good reasons can stop. And I'm starting to have good reasons. I have health problems. I have problems at work. I can no longer go to school. I have problems in all of my relationships. I'm doing a lot of demoralizing things, although I don't see them as demoralizing because it's just normal. And I was a liar and very secretive, and I would do things, and if I got caught, I would feel really bad about them, and my intention was not to do it again, but I would do it again, and I would just try and be sneakier about it. And my life was a total lie, and that was one of the first things I heard when I came to meetings was about honesty. And that was a good thing for me to hear, because that was the complete opposite of everything that I was and how I was in my life. I'm bouncing all over the place. But so I came to my first meeting, and they don't drink, and that's not going to work for me. So I'm back off and running, and it's just progressing more and more in my life. And, you know, what at one point was the solution, and my life has begun, and this great thing in my life has now made my life really small, to where every day at work I know that today might be the last day, and I'm sick every single day. And the only thing that makes me feel better is to start drinking as soon as I get off work. And you know, I know, like, I was 21 years old, and, you know, I had dreams then for my life, like, to graduate school or to have a relationship, things I wanted in my life. And I could see at that point that none of those things were going to happen for me. And I would think occasionally, you know, I might have to go back to those meetings someday and then, you know, just probably go drink again anyway. But one night, I had a moment of clarity. I was driving, and I heard a voice that was a voice that I wasn't familiar with, and it said, either quit or die. And I knew it wasn't a joke. And I'd had a really big reservation. well, I'll just tell you. I was scared that I was going to gain weight. And like, literally, I would joke around with my sister, like, give me a gun before I want that to happen. Because being thin and getting attention from men was really, really, really important to me, and, you know, I'd rather be dead. So that was and that does kill women. My younger sister died, and I might share about that as I go on a little bit. But that was a huge reservation for me, and I said a prayer, and I looked, and I asked God, that I knew nothing about. I said, please help me. And it's like, even if I have to gain weight. So for me, that was a surrender experience. And I intuitively knew to come back to meetings. I didn't know anything about what you guys do here. All I knew is that it was free and people were staying sober. Oh, that was enough for me. Like, and it was anonymous, which was also good because I didn't want to have to tell anybody. So I started coming to meetings, and I heard about getting a sponsor, and I was doing those things. Usually I'm like, whoa, 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 but and it wasn't easy for me. I was really confused because I thought, you know, I thought for so long, I just need to stop and then I'll be okay. And then I stop and I start coming to meetings, and I did find hope. Like, I found hope when I came to meetings, and I found a sponsor. I wanted somebody who was, like, young, who had done the things I had done, so that I could have hope that it was possible to be sober. And I met somebody like that, my first sponsor, and she was very loving and but it was really difficult for me to be sober because I didn't, you know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent when I was sober, and that my solution was now gone. And I would, you know, I was following suggestions, and I was going to meetings regularly, and I was working the steps, and I was calling my sponsor, and I was driving over here with Aaron, and thank you to all my friends who came to support me tonight. I probably said and. We were talking, I was talking with her about the difference between working steps and taking steps. And when in the beginning, I worked steps. And that was like, sponsor gives me an assignment, and I do the assignment and get my check mark so that I can go on to the next one. And there was some benefit in that for me. I did get some benefit out of doing that. But I was still struggling so much, and I was very confused as to why I'm sober now. And now I had this idea that that was supposed to be the solution. And so I thought, well, I must have some other problem. So I start, like, looking outside for solutions. Like, I get a therapist, and the therapist just wants to put me on antidepressants, and after three sessions of paying for that, I'm like, I'm done with this. I'd rather go get a massage than keep paying for $60 for her to try and tell me to do something I don't want to do. And I'm reading every self-help book that, you know, I can find, and then I'm thinking, well, maybe I really have an eating disorder, so I'm going to a program for that, and I'm getting a sponsor in that, and I'm just all over the place. And I make it to a year and 10 days, and then I was happy. It was really hard for me to get that year, but I was happy about having that year, and I had no intention of relapsing. But one day, you know how relapses start, one day I went to work, and I was upset. I'm trying not to cuss. I was not happy. I was angry. That's, you know, I was angry, I was full of self-pity, I was afraid, and I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm just done with sobriety. And I ended up relapsing. And luckily, I came back to meetings, and I haven't had a drink since that day. And I still struggled for quite a while. And my sponsor, I would call her, and one day she said to me, you know, Andrea, it just wasn't that hard for me. And I didn't know what to do with, like, if, you know, my sponsor, like, she can't help me. Like, it wasn't that hard for her. And so, you know, I sponsor hop, and then finally I decide I don't even need a sponsor. I'm like, I don't think it says that you need a sponsor in the book, so I don't even need a sponsor. And I'm going to group therapy for eating disorders and, you know, but I'm not getting any better. And I'm asking people questions and I'm not finding any freedom. And I'm asking people questions and nobody can answer my questions. I'm like, they kind of just like skate around my question, but I wasn't getting answers to my questions. And I was suffering and struggling a lot, and I was sober and confused. And I was talking to a girlfriend one day, and anyway, I'll just not go into all the details, but I ended up meeting my current sponsor maybe about 13 years ago, and he was in AA, and he was sharing about the solution from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hadn't heard it before, and I just knew he wasn't full of, I'm trying to think of a substitute for the word, baloney, yeah, thanks, Isaac, yeah, I knew he wasn't full of baloney, and he talked about things that sounded really good to me at that point. He said that the whole point of this was to have my spirit wake up, and that sounded really good because although I was sober, that felt I had no connection with my spirit inside of me at all. So that was really appealing. He also talked about the process of taking the steps and how there was pain when you go through that process, but that you got to come out the other side. And that sounded really good to me as well. He said another thing that didn't sound so good. He said, my goal is to become unnecessary in your life as soon as possible. And I thought, that's kind of harsh. I mean, I didn't tell him that, but I thought that, like, that's kind of harsh. He nor I had any idea how long that would take. yeah, he's a good part of the reason why I'm here tonight. He's like, have you ever heard, he's not a big slogan one either, but like, have you ever heard that you don't say no to an AA request? I'm like, okay, I got it. All right, yes, you know, I'll do it. But, you know, I get it now what that was about, that I want to, become unnecessary in your life as soon as possible, is that he wanted me to find this solution in AA, which is a higher power, which is going to solve my problems, and that I'm going to be able to rely on that power. And so it's actually a very loving thing that he said that just didn't sound loving at the time. So I started working with this sponsor, and I was still a visitor to AA. I was a visitor to AA for a long time, because it took me a long time to get honest about alcohol in my life. And so I worked more steps with this sponsor, and then when I got to step 9, what I really wanted was a boyfriend, and I really wanted a career, and I really wanted to make money, and I really wanted designer jeans and a purse, And I'll go to meetings and I'll do your little service and I'll work these steps, but, you know, on most of what I'm doing is all this other stuff. And, and I got to a place where I thought I had arrived. You know, I got there when I was drinking too, at one point where, you know, everything was going my way and I had arrived. And then I got there again another time in sobriety where I felt like I had arrived. You know, I had the boyfriend and I was working out and I had the job and the designer clothes and all that stuff. But I still knew that there's something in me that wasn't right. I have no idea how much time I have here. Half an hour. I didn't start my timer. Half an hour. All right. I don't have to rush. All right. So, at 7, so I had a younger sister that I started partying with, and when I had about 6 years, I called her one morning. I didn't know if this was self-will or God's will, but she never got sober. Not for long, if she did. And so I had about 6 years sober, and I called her, and I'm like, if she answers, I'm going to just tell her what I told her. And she answered, which she didn't answer very often. So she answers the phone, and I said, I'll be really sad if you die. And Oh, I'll back up a little bit. When I first started going to meetings, I don't hear this now, but people used to always talk about reservations and what their reservations were. And if this happened, you know, would they be able to stay sober? And I would think, like, what would that be? You know, what in my life would be like the worst thing I could imagine? And it was my sister dying. And so I called and I told her that. And, you know, when you're loaded, I think that's a bit too heavy. You know, like, I'm really afraid you're going to die. I'll be really sad if you die. And she's like, you know, I got to go. And then I ended up going for a walk with a friend, and she ended up calling me back, and I'm sad that I missed that call, because maybe it would have been a window or an opportunity. But a year later, I did get the phone call that she was unconscious in the hospital, and I had talked to her. I mean, this isn't me, this is a power greater than myself, but I had talked to her that prior week, and I had invited her to a function that was going on with people who were sober up in LA, and she lived up in LA, and I invited her, and she said maybe. And then that day that I was up there is when she ended up going into the hospital. So I was on my way back down from LA, and my mom was on her way up to LA, and we met halfway, and I ended up going up to LA. And she was unconscious on life support for 5 days in the hospital, and I was there. And prior to that, you know, I was telling you about I had this recovered sponsor, and I would call my sponsor all the time with my drama du jour. There's this job, you know, my job, or my boyfriend, or not even boyfriend. This guy said this to me, like, on and on, just drama. And my sponsor would say things to me like, trust God, be honest, pray, be of service, like, and that was a solution to everything, and it still is the solution to everything. But I was so glad that I had all that experience of doing that, because that's, you know, when I was in the hospital, like, that's what I did. And, you know, follow your intuition. When I got here, I didn't know what my intuition was. I didn't have a clue what my intuition was. But being there in the hospital, like, I was able to pray, and I was able to follow my intuition. And, you know, I was in the same clothes I had been in when I went up to LA. I wasn't planning on being there for 5 days. And I wanted to come home, and I wanted to get clean clothes. And my intuition was like, you know, just kept me there. And so, you know, she passed away. And really, that was the first time where it was like every second of my life I felt like I was listening to a power greater than myself telling me what the next step was. And I felt really connected to God during that time. And I'm grateful that I don't think God makes bad things happen. I think God helps me to get through the difficult things and the challenging things in my life. And what happened for me also when she passed away was that my purpose became really clear. I knew that my purpose was to recover and to help other people to recovery. Like, things get put into perspective when something like that happens in your life. And, like, I knew all, like, the petty little stuff that I worried about wasn't important. The most important thing in my life was to recover and to help other people. And I thought that that was going to give me the willingness to do what it took to get better. But it took longer than that. So after she died, for like the next year, I just traveled around, and that's what I needed to do. And I was very confused between what was grief and what was alcoholism, what was I suffering from at that particular moment, and I still don't know the answer. It was a combination of like being unrecovered and sober and going through grief. Also, this is kind of not in line, but another thing I wanted to share was about my sponsor. Like, the first prayer that my sponsor ever gave me was, God, please direct me towards my spiritual awakening and do not let me be diverted from my primary purpose. I said the prayer. I don't think that I fully comprehended the prayer. The guide me towards my spiritual awakening, I didn't realize, like, the spiritual awakening is the solution to alcoholism, and the don't let me be diverted. I got caught in the diversion, like, from that, seeking that solution. And it took a lot of desperation for me not drinking before I was willing to do that. So I had this recovered sponsor, and I'd call him, and I knew that he had this connection with God and this intuition. So I thought, I call my sponsor. My sponsor has this connection with God straight up, and he can just give it to me and tell me what to do with my life. And I probably would have slid on that for a very long time. And then he's really the one that probably was like, he finally says to me, I think I hadn't had a drink in 9 years. And he says, you know, Andrea, I can't take away your alcoholism. And like, this is like sponsor number two that's telling me, I'm like, he can't help me. So I will show him. I had a stack of CDs from a book study he had done years and years ago that I could never got through. And I'm like, okay, if he's not going to talk to me and tell me what to do, then I'm going to listen to these CDs that he did, you know? And like, it was just like, I'm on my own. And I was so desperate. And I remember around the same time where he tells me, you know, he can't take away my alcoholism. I'm like, if this doesn't work, and I mean the steps, you know, like if this doesn't work, I hope I get hit by a car and die really fast and that nobody else is hurt. And I also said I hope my mom had a heart attack at the same time because I knew she couldn't take losing like me. Like I was, you know, there was two of us and she couldn't handle that. And I'm too chicken to do it myself. But I was just so tired of struggling and suffering, even though I wasn't drinking. And luckily for me, you know, and probably hopefully some of you can relate to that. Maybe some of you who've relapsed can relate to that, like what happens prior to the relapse. And I got to that place where I'm like, I know I'm not going to be able to stay sober anymore. And I'm really grateful that that desperation took me to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started reading it for the first time with an open mind. Because always when I would read the book before then, I was like, not me, not that bad, you know, like, didn't relate, don't relate. And this time I started reading it and I got to one of those, I don't relate. It was like Bill's heroes were financial leaders and, you know, and I'm like, I don't relate to that. And normally I'd be like, I don't relate, keep going, you know, but I stopped and I said, well, do I relate? And if so, how do I relate? And I realized that like thin, beautiful women were my heroes. so I relate to, I was shocked when I started going through the book with an open mind and begging God to help me see the truth about alcohol in my life. Like, just begging, because my sponsor kept telling me for all these years, like, you need to admit you're an alcoholic. And I didn't understand why that was so important. I was just like, okay, what does that have to do with anything? I haven't had a drink in all these years. Like, I think my problem is something other than that. But, you know, I was desperate, and I started reading the book and going through it, and I was shocked that I was identifying with like everything in there. And my life started to make a lot more sense once I did that and went through the book like that. And you know, I mentioned earlier, like I think there's a difference between taking the steps and working the steps. And I had an amazing experience going through the steps at that point. And I really got that I was powerless over alcohol. And it was kind of like that, like, take your breath away. Like, I don't even have the power to save my own life. Like, I can't. And then, you know, the second step, I didn't even realize that I was insane. I didn't know that my thinking was insane. You find that funny? I didn't. But, you know, my life makes a whole lot more sense if I'm insane. Like, my thinking and what goes on in here makes a whole lot more sense if I'm insane. And then the third step, you know, I had sponsors before, and I had gotten down on my knees, and I had said the prayer, so I didn't just want to do that again. So I just was like, okay, I'm just going to wait until it feels right. And I read what it said in the book, and it said that, you know, the wording was optional. At this time, my grandma was here, and she was in ICU, and I was in the hospital with her, and, you know, what I learned here was to be of service, and I'm in there, and I'm reading her Catholic literature to her, and I'm reading something, and I realize in the middle of it that I'm taking the third step with my grandma in the ICU room, and I'm just like, tears were just coming down, because I don't even know what it says, I don't even know which book it was in, but whatever it was saying, the wording was different, but I was taking the third step, which was a really incredible experience. And then since I had so much time, I guess I can keep going on that. Then, you know, I did the fourth step, and I was pissed off. And I did a lot of writing. And, you know, like my sponsor said, like, there was pain, but I got to go out the other side. And for me, it's like, I was just, at this point, I was just willing to do anything, not to suffer and struggle anymore. There were parts of it that were definitely challenging. But I had never seen before was how selfish I was. Like, I had never seen, like, the part I played in my life. And then everything just kind of fell into place when I went through the steps. And by the time, you know, the fifth step, I ended up reading by myself. He says we share with,
You have the steps here, up here. But I made it to God, ourselves, another human being. So I was reading my fifth step by myself to God. And, you know, I just have tears. And it was during that, like, at that point, I think, like, the steps 6 and 7 just happened for me. Like, I didn't want to be that person anymore. The person that I saw in the fourth column when we're working the fourth step, like, I just didn't want to be that anymore. And then amends, you know, I'd been sober for a while at the point where when I was taking the steps finally, I had made amends before and I had paid back a lot of things and, I kind of brushed over some other things I wanted to share about, with the third step and God, like that's a really, actually really important part is, you know, I remember my sponsor telling me to write down a piece of paper, two columns, and one is my old idea of God and the other side is my what I needed God to be. And the first thing that I needed was a power that would let me come up with my own conception of a higher power. And that was challenging for me. I didn't, like, you can just come up with your own higher power. Like, that's wishful thinking, but you can't do it. But I was willing to try it anyway, and I was really desperate. So I took it really seriously. Like, what do I need? And the biggest thing I needed is I needed a power that was big enough for me to be able to see the truth, like to get through my stubbornness so that I could see the truth. And when I was conscious that that was happening in my life was another one of those like tears of joy. Like, I can't believe it's working for me, because struggling and suffering for that long, I go to meetings. I'm like, I'm just worse than these people. Like, I didn't think it was going to work for me. And when I finished coming up with my own conception of God, I remember calling my sponsor and leaving a message like, I have the coolest God ever. Because I had a lot of old ideas about God. And they were like, God's will, you know, it talks about like seeking a spiritual way of life or dying an alcoholic death. And I really wasn't too thrilled about what I thought seeking a spiritual way of life was going to look like for me. I thought it was like everything I didn't want. I was going to never be able to wear makeup. I was going to have to be very homely, single, poor, like... So I didn't want that. And I had to have, like, maybe that's not God's will for me. Like, that requires some letting go on my part of old ideas of a power greater than myself, for sure. And I needed that to actually keep going on with the steps. It was kind of like, God, this would be really cool if this is possible to have your own conception of God. And if this thing worked in 10 minutes. Okay. So that was a really cool experience, and then my process when I was taking the steps were really easy and flowed very naturally, and that was one of them. And then the ninth step too, like I had to pray and ask for help. Like, what amends do I still owe? And you know, one of them was to my sister, and she's gone. And I did make face-to-face amends to her while she was alive, and she said she forgave me, but I still felt like I owed her amends. What came out was surprising to me. It was like for me to be happy and me to forgive myself and to carry the message and to dance and enjoy my life. And I'm like, this is really cool. And another thing that came up for me that I had never done before is when I was doing my fourth step, and it you take the sexual inventory and it says we come up with a sexual ideal. And I did that. And when I was done with it, I felt kind of the same. I don't want to God and my sexual ideal at the same, but I felt really stoked on my, you know, the God of my conception. But then when I came up with my ideal, it was like totally from my heart and it felt like God's will for me. And I just remember finishing that going, wow, that would be really cool. And it also says that we have to live up to that. And so I get, that's like what it's like today is I get, that's one of the things I get to do is I get to live up to that. And I didn't have the power to do that before. I could have these ideals, but I never had the power to live up to that. Cute guy gave me attention, like I'm off and running. And that was one of the things that let me know that I was really changing is when I was doing all this work and all this writing, I went to a meeting and this guy asked me he wanted me to watch a movie with him after the meeting. He's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm going home to write. And it was all like, I shocked myself. Like I finally was putting my recovery ahead of everything. And I needed to do that. And it took me a long time before I was willing to do that. But that's the only time when like my things started to change for me. So what it's like today, and I have probably like 7 minutes or so. So let me tell you what it's like today in my life. I like what Raymond was talking about, is how, you know, we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, and this is what that looks for, like, for me today. You know, I get up in the morning and I meditate and I say the prayers that are in the book, and then I continue to take inventory throughout the day, and I just do this stuff naturally now. I didn't do it naturally in the beginning, but I pray all the time, and sometimes I have all the character defects going on at one time. Like I said, we continue to watch for anger, fear, selfishness. They somehow just kind of clump together for me. Like if one's going, they're just all going on. And the solution is always to, you know, be of service. So pray, ask for help, you know, and to be of service, and so that, you know, that's what I do in my daily life. I was sharing with Isaac beforehand about, we were talking about moderation, well, extremes in moderation, and 200 Christmas cards is pretty funny. he's like, I would, you were talking about how you don't, you know, do things in moderation, and moderation was like not possible for me for a very long time. It's either like I'm eating vegetables with no sugar, or I'm eating like ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like there was just no moderation at all. And that's one of the things today that, and it's not because of my own power, it's because I have a power greater than myself in my life today that I found that my life is pretty moderate. Like I exercise moderately. Like I went to a spin class the other day and I left after 30 minutes. I used to think like, why would you leave after 30? You know, I mean, I didn't want to hurt my body and I was tired and I'd had enough, you know, like, so I left. And, you know, always before, it's like, I have to make it to the end. I have to make it to the top. I have to like go, go, go extreme. And now like in most all areas of my life, except for thinking, I'm really moderate. Like, yeah. Which is really cool, and which is only because of God, because, you know, me in moderation, I didn't even think that was going to be possible for me. And I get to be of service. Like, this was not an aspiration of mine. Like, I never wanted to be up here. This is not the easier, softer way. But I didn't wake up in the middle of the night this week, so that's cool, because other times when I've had to speak, like, it wakes me up in the middle of the night. So, I get to sponsor. One of the things it says, one of the first italics in the book is that he was sober. I think that's the reason why I have a few sponsees right now, is because people I met when I was newly sober have gone out. And this happens quite often. People I met, you know, 15 years ago in the program, I'll see, run into them now, and they've gone out and they're back. And I think the fact that you're still sober, maybe they think I must be doing something right, so they've asked me to sponsor them, and that's been a really real gift in my life. And because when I get together with somebody else and we're reading the book together, it gives me the solution to what's going on in my life today. And I'm able to, you know, sometimes I can get lost in my mind, and it just brings me right back to like what's happening, and what the solution is. So I get a whole lot out of that, and I have service commitments. I do a couple H&I commitments with some friends that are here today, and answer the phones at AA Central a couple times a month. And thanks to Larry, I've been speaking at meetings for the last 6 months. Just about the time I'm like comfortable again, he'll like ask me, and then it's like, oh, here we go again. But it's just getting a little bit easier. And what else is it like today? I have a job that my heart is really in, which is really cool. Like, I work with a woman and we sing and dance and she trusts me. And that's the thing. Like, people trust me today and can rely on me. And if I say I'm going to be somewhere, I show up and I try and think of others and do service. And I'm so grateful. Like, my life now, there was a time where I was like so desperate. I was like calling everybody. I was calling Detox and AA and Central and like, is there anything I can do? And they're like, no, no, no. Like, everyone was saying no. But the clubhouse that an OB needed to be cleaned, I'm like, I'll do it. And I didn't know how long that commitment was going to, I was desperate. So I'm like, you know, I'll do it, whatever. But now my life is such that I have commitments set up. So if I'm in a funky place, like, I usually have something I am doing to be of service that day. And it's just a part of my life. So I think I'm kind of... kind of getting close to out of time. I don't have any like really cool thing to close with. It's the holidays. So, okay, here's my closing. I saw something really cool in the women's restroom at La Jolla speakers meeting. So I'll share that with you because I've been thinking about it this season. And it was worship fully. So worship was one of those spiritual terms that I had to get over because that was one that I didn't like. But it said worship fully, spend less, give presents, and love all. And so that just resonated with me. And thanks for listening to me. And happy holidays to everybody. That's it.